Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 17, Psychic Friends. And now here are your psychic friends,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Tara and Dove Kale.
Hello.
Hello, listeners. Before we get into this episode, a quick announcement about an upcoming Again With This episode, number 214. That drops November 1st, which is the anniversary of my late mother's birth. So we thought that we would do a Starverse-related episode of other TV, of a show that she watched all the time and really liked, which is how we are coming to watch Saint Elsewhere, Season 1, Episode 22, Addiction. That is starring Scott Paulin, a.k.a. Professor Corey Randall, as the luckless, substance-misusing son of a main character on St. Elsewhere. This episode is not on Hulu with the rest of its season, but we did manage to find it. We'll link it in the show notes, and you should definitely come along, check it out, watch along with us.
Yeah, I look forward to finding out what the reason is for this episode not making it to Hulu. I assume he highly sings some song or other, but we'll all discover this together. Mm-hmm. As well, this Thursday, October 31st, we're going to bring you an extra spooky installment. Probably not. How could it get scarier than someone be, please give me a lobotomy, of Again With Them. That is our monthly digest recapping Jenny and Tori's terrible podcast, 90210MG. Would love to give you a preview of what you can expect to hear, but we are in the time machine. We haven't even recorded the September episode yet, so we don't know what lies ahead for us. We're scared, as always. So in that sense, it is on theme. So that is a special perk for our Patreon supporters at the $5 level and up if you want to hear it. Kick up that pledge or join for the first time. againwiththispodcast.com/club. Ready? Mm-hmm. Here we go. Starting with our D plot, Jen tries to make a raisin love connection. A lot of the action in this episode revolves around a town fair, but we are over a third of the way through it before we get to these two together organizing a table full of quilts and other crafts as Grams asks if Jen really can't work things out with Ty. Jen says she and Grams are both destined to face the future as single women moments before Jen looks across the park and sees an older gentleman at his own booth, curiously watching Grams. Grams hisses at Jen not to be silly. This guy's not checking her out, but then he's suddenly coming over, smoothing his hair, and then clip two.
Evelyn Ryan. It's me, Whit. Whit Hubley.
Lord in heavens, I thought you were dead.
Great pickup line. Funny. Whit invites Grams to catch up, but she nicely puts him off. And when he's gone, Jen urges her to go, saying he is sexy. And unsurprisingly, Grams does not care for that kind of talk one bit. Mm-hmm. When we return to them later, Jen is holding a little doodad. She finds out from an offended Grams is a decorated clothespin for potato chip bags. Perfect town fair craft booth bullshit. Oh, I loved this detail.
Absolutely. That and like the painted magnets with the I'm the world's best grandma. Uh-huh. I mean, that at least is Cape Cod craft fair accurate. Mm-hmm. Can attest.
Yes. And credit to Whit, what we see of his booth is like he seems to be some kind of like a wood worker and has made these like beautiful polished lamps of two different shades of wood. And they look really nice. Everything else we see is kind of
shady. Yeah, I'd buy one of those.
I would too. Yeah. So Jen spots Whit returning and says that if he asks Grams out again, she should say yes, not only because Whit seems to have the only booth at the fair selling anything worth having, but it's not a consideration for me. And sure enough, he holds up a red rose and says he won't take no for an answer. Grams wouldn't make an old man eat alone, would she? But she would. He looks dismayed. She immediately agrees to dinner when he is sad about it. So he gives her the rose and she gets all Twitter-pated. But Jen can tell she's emotional about it and urges her not to feel guilty about Gramps, who would want her to go on with her life. Gramps firmly says that part of her life is over. Plus, she graduated from high school with Whit and she looks old enough to be his mother. So Jen thinks it's time to introduce Gramps to her friends, Miss Clairol and Estee Lauder. Hardy har. But then Jen's dying Grams' hair and teasing her about contraceptives. Grams tries to leave. She's like sitting in the sink. But Jen's just kidding. She's sure the night will be romantic and thinks Whit seems great. And he probably has his own condoms. And Grams flips out about that, but silently. And then Jen picks out something from her own closet for Grams to wear. I love this detail, too. It's something we have seen Jen wear in an earlier episode, that sort of like light pinky purpley twin set.
Mm-hmm.
So she lends that to Grams, does her makeup. Grams is stunned by the transformation. And later, Jen finds Grams back at the fair sitting by a fire. Turns out Whit's wife wasn't feeling well, so he had to cancel. And Jen apologizes for pushing Grams to go out with him, but Grams says she's fine, and Jen did something wonderful for Grams today. Grams assumed that she had done all the living she was going to, but now she knows she needs to open up to new friends. Jen asks if Grams is ever afraid of facing the future alone. She says she sometimes is, and so is Jen, and it's sweet. I like this plot line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They were a little light on details of, like, where Whit came from, but I filled in the backstory that, like, he moved a few towns over. He's just here to do the fair, and his wife got sick while they were there, because otherwise it makes no sense that they wouldn't have seen each other before now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
But this is all detail we didn't need, so that's fine that they didn't include it. I'm just crazy. Moving on, speaking of crazy, to the C-plot. Andy frets about her future, and a $5 fortune teller doesn't help. We join Andy and Pacey walking in town. His pants are so huge, they are pooled around his ankles, as you can see in the visual aids.
It's just like David Silver in college. Yep. Size.
Mm-hmm.
Brutal.
Or David Silver at this point on 90210, because they were both on at the same time and pants were big. Mm-hmm. Then as well.
Yeah.
Pacey tells Andy about the bad time he had last year puppeteering the police department's safety dog at the fair, which is why he doesn't want to do it again. Andy always looked up to the one from her childhood, which Pacey says is why she got called Andy McGeek as a kid. Good point, and he's right.
Mm-hmm.
But she really wants to go and get her fortune told. Pacey says that is a scam, so she promises that if he will be Captain Skippy again, they can do something she can only whisper in his ear, and he immediately launches into his very French-Canadian Captain Skippy voice. Why not?
Sure.
When we see them next, they're at the Captain Skippy booth, Pacey joking with Andy about being safe when you have sex by doing it where he can't get caught. Andy wants him to go get his fortune told, but he doesn't want bad news. But doesn't he think that if he knew it was coming up, he could prepare? She asks. Pacey offers to predict Andy's future himself, that a tall, dark, handsome man will come sweep her off her feet. And Andy says she has something to look forward to. Har, har, har.
Hmm.
Later, Captain Skippy wraps up his presentation and gets bullied by some middle schoolers. So Pacey was right. This job sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy's not even watching. She's with Madame Zenovich, the fortune teller, asking what she sees. Suddenly, the candle blows out. And when Pacey finds Andy moments later, she's very flustered and goes for a walk alone. So later still, Madame Zenovich tells Pacey to come see her, and he lays into her about Andy. Clip 3.
I'm just curious. When somebody comes to you to have their fortune told, why can't you just say something nice? Something reassuring, because I guarantee you that's all they want to hear.
And that would not be the truth. If they ask for the truth, then they must hear the answer.
Well, I'm not asking.
I think I tell you anyway. I see a young man who wears a mask that is not his own. To the world, he's strong and confident. But beneath the mask is a little boy, afraid of the world, afraid of everything. He knows all he has is resting on a house of cards. Even the tiniest gust of wind knock it all down.
What?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I mean, I don't understand this prediction because I think the writers still don't understand what they want Pacey's home life to be.
Yeah.
Or what they want Pacey to be, and they're just like building the road and driving the Pacey car on it at the same time, which, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Joshua Jackson usually manages to sort of elide these wild inconsistencies in how much his family cares about him, or like, does he live on the roof? What is happening?
Right. Yeah.
But this is kind of a lot, so yeah.
So then Pacey finds Andy and implores her to tell him what happened. Andy just wanted to know things were going to get better, but Madame Zenovich said the troubles she's already been through were just a preview of what's to come. She's not sure she can handle more unhappiness. Pacey can't believe Andy would take anything Madame Zenovich said seriously. Her future's going to be incredible. Andy wishes she could believe it, but Pacey says she doesn't have to. He'll believe it for her. She lets him pull her close and seems comforted, but who knows, because that's where we leave it for now. On to the B-plot, Joey, like Donna Martin before her, becomes a photographer's muse. In the cafeteria, Joey and her Diet Coke assess the guys in line as loser, pervert, serial killer, and airhead, then tells Jack it's his turn to rate them. He appreciates her attempt to bond, but he's not going to check out guys with her. Joey says it's not sexual, it's just superficial fun. Sighs that this is the most amusement she's had in weeks, then resumes her rating. Conceited, too pretty, definitely a Frank, as in Stein. I guess they couldn't find a local hire who could pass as a Leo, as in DiCaprio, by Joey's standards, because when she says one guy is, we don't see him.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really rude to all the ones that she was saying were ugly, honestly, but whatever. That's their problem.
Yeah. I mean, the other problem is the extras that or background actors they tend to cast as their fellow high school students are yes. very evidently 28 years old.
Oh, so. Yes. Doing this part to pay their mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
So Jack resets their relationship for the new viewers. Joey asks if Jack is bothered by her talking like this, and they both agree it's fine. And then we're with them at the fair. Jack helps Joey hang work from her art class. When he calls her on being lost in thought, she says she was thinking about kisses. He laughs since she famously threw away a relationship in pursuit of self-fulfillment. She admits she regrets ever saying that, which is probably the writers admitting they regret it because it keeps coming up and no one is happy about it. She vulnerably says she misses kissing and hopes she'll get to do it again before the millennium. Jack is confident she will. And then Dawson materializes and asks what they're talking about. Joey says nothing, so he actually takes a hint and says he'll see them later. Jack asks where she would rate him, and Joey says Dawson is definitely a Leo, Uncle Leo, maybe. She wants to... Hello! She Burn. Wants to get their friendship back, and Jack tells her to give it time. For now, they should find out when Joey's next kiss will be by visiting Madame Zenovich. And in the tent, Madame Zenovich stubs out a cig and gets $5 off Jack. She says she sees a C and tries a bunch of different C names. Joey knows a Carol she hasn't seen since kindergarten. Carol is apparently telling Madame Zenovich she borrowed something and never returned it. And Joey's like, I don't know, maybe a pencil. Madame Zenovich is like, yeah, Carol has your pencil.
I mean, Carol's dead in this scenario, right?
So, I guess.
I mean, I don't know. Right?
It depends on how.
Why
the
else
spirit...
would you be communicating?
Right. I don't know.
So, yeah, no one seems to like the fact that a classmate of yours died.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not about the pencil. Anyway, that was just a weird thing that I was like, so no one's going to comment on the fact that her spirit is communicating with you about a pencil?
I don't know.
Go to the library, look that up. Anyway.
Right. I mean, maybe it's a different C. Who knows?
This is also an episode where they can't get weather continuity right in between like lines of dialogue in an outdoor scene. So,
right,
like rain to sunshine within like a single exchange of dialogue. So, I'm not sure why I'm seizing on this of all things.
The same week that I watched this episode, I heard a podcast where they're talking about the new Tyler Henry show on Netflix. He's a medium. Or he's a medium, air quotes. And they played a clip of him talking to Jerry O'Connell. And the whole bit with this guy, he previously had a show on E! Is that he only talks to celebrities. And so whenever you watch it, you're like, okay, he Googled this person. Like, they're famous. It's easy to find things out about them. But he was like, I'm seeing a train. Like, I don't know. For some reason, all I'm seeing is like, choo-choo. Like, he does a train noise like a five-year-old.
Oh my God.
Jerry's like, oh my God, that's crazy. My grandfather's brother was killed by a train or like something. And then it turns out like his grandfather was like a mayor in New Jersey. So again, this is very easy to look up. Anyway, back to this episode. A wind comes through the tent, activating the wind chimes and clip four.
There has been much pain in your past. Too much loss for one so young. You put up walls to protect you from harm, but by doing so, you cut yourself off from new possibilities, new adventures. You must say yes to every opportunity that comes your way.
So what about my future?
What do you want to know?
What's going to happen?
You'll come to a fork in the road. You have to choose which path to take.
Well, how will I know which to choose?
You will be safe as long as you follow your heart.
Anything else?
A tall, dark man will come into your life.
When?
Soon.
I also see the letter J and a body of water. Exactly. Really? Like, which is it? She has the gift or not?
Right. So dumb. And even when the mystical music is playing, we're supposed to think, no, this is for real. Like, all of that is still so generic. You've had a lot of pain and you put up walls to protect yourself. Literally applies to every person who is alive.
Yeah.
So later, Joey's annoyed she wasted her money on such a vague and cliched fortune. But then all of a sudden, a guy we're obviously supposed to think is hot, but has hair that looks like a wig on crooked is in the art tent asking about Joey's pieces. And it's not even dark. It's like he's got frosted tips. Like none of this lines up. It's so dumb.
Awful. Yeah.
So after the commercial, this guy and his crooked wig hair says Joey's art is quite good and introduces himself as Colin Manchester. He tells her to keep up the good work and slips out. Jack scolds Joey for being so cold with her possible dream guy and says she should use Colin for practice, ew, and have an adventure. So she works up the courage to go back to Colin and say his work is really quite remarkable, not really beating the Ice Queen allegations with that one, but he thanks her. She introduces herself and he asks to buy her a hot chocolate, and Jack watches them go, happy for her. When we rejoin them, Joey's telling Colin a happy memory of how serene her mother would get when she was working on an art project. And Colin walks them to a bench and clip five.
Look, please don't take this the wrong way, but are you even aware of how unbelievably beautiful you are?
Okay.
I see the smooth-talking gigolo convention got out early today, but Joey changes the subject back to his photography. He just uses that to return to the kinds of faces you could stare at for hours. She establishes that he's supposed to be a freshman at the Art Institute, so we can think he might only be 17 and thus not such a creep, but he only wants to talk about her, going on about her sensuous lips while touching them with his hand. They just met, and she doesn't know where they have been, frankly.
Oh, God. And he also is touching them in such a way that, like, it's like his hand is asleep.
Right. Yes. Like, off screen.
So he's just sort of pawing her face, and she's like, why are you?
I want the camera to like pan over to him so we see he's holding like the arm prop from the previous episode that Dawson was gesturing with, and he's like petting her face with it.
Oh, God.
When he brings up Carol Lombard, Joey laughs, presumably remembering Madame Zenovich. Colin might be completely out of line, but could he possibly photograph her? So then Joey reports to Jack that she's meeting Colin in an hour to do that. She doesn't know anything about him, doesn't want to know, doesn't need him to know anything about her either. She thinks maybe she'll learn something from him, and Jack sarcastically asks if it'll be about the high art of French kissing, and then tries to toss a piece of popcorn in his mouth and misses, which I choose to believe was not in the script. I love it. He then, though, is worried that Colin could be a tall, dark psychopath. So at Colin's school's theater, Joey asks what he's thinking for her wardrobe right before we see Jax also with them, nominating himself stylist for the shoot. And then we smash cut to Joey in a black feather boa Jack picked out and clip six.
I feel like a drag queen.
Okay, Sarah, I looked for the moment from Walking and Talking where Anne Heche's character comes from her wedding hair and makeup tryout and says she looks like a drag queen.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't find a clip. I'm sure, though, they showed it to Katie Holmes before this scene because her posture and her intonation are identical.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. She just kept curling and spraying. Ow! Curling and spraying. So good.
So Jack says she looks great and assists Colin as he starts shooting and yelling references. And Jack throws in a few himself, and Colin's about it, asking if Jack and Joey are just friends. Jack confirms they are, and Colin says good. And the shoot goes through a leopard coat and knee-high boots and then an Annie Hall thing. Colin is happy and can't wait to print these photos out, but when Joey hugs him and seems like she's going for the kiss, he grabs both her hands and says she's a born diva, and we all see where this is going, except for Joey.
Except for Joey, who of all people should maybe be a little more attuned. Just my opinion.
Well, so later when Joey's back in her own clothes, Colin once again gets very intense about wanting to ask her something. And once again, she thinks it's to kiss her. And once again, it's not. This time it's what Jack's situation is. So she goes straight to him and says that Colin's gay. Also, that she probably should have seen this coming when he compared her to Madonna and Marilyn Monroe. But Jack is still back on the first thing she said. Clip 7.
He's gay. As in $3 bill.
You kidding me?
No. And Jack, you really need to develop some gaydar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I hear they're giving a training course on that down at the community center.
Look, I'm sorry. I'm new at this, and...
You? What about me? People look at me like any minute I'm about to start tap dancing to Bette Midler albums.
Well, this should cheer you up. As it turns out, a tall, dark stranger's coming into your life.
What?
Well, he wanted to meet you after the fair, so I told him he'd be by the fire at 11.
You what? Why?
Because he's nice and smart and attractive. I mean, what's your problem? Just go out with him.
You know, just because there happens to be a second homosexual in Capeside, it doesn't mean that I'm obligated to go out with him, Joey.
True.
Provincetown is right there. Also, yes, I'm sure the entire student population of an art institute is at one end of the Kinsey scale. Like, guys, mm-hmm. Oh my God. And $3 bill? When are we? That's like boomer shit extraordinaire.
Mm-hmm.
Old boomer shit, like war baby shit. Like my parents would have said that. God, the show.
I think there is still a gay bar in New York called $3 Bills, if I recall correctly. But yes, it is an antique reference. I'll say... Bad luck to Jack. Like, you're on a TV show, which means anytime anyone is gay, they're going to try and put you with them. That's just how it goes. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yeah. Lucky you. David Monahan's coming. I mean, that's lucky true. All of us.
Sometime later, Jack brings Joey a hot chocolate and apologizes for overreacting. He knows he should be moving forward to this new phase, but he's not ready yet. She reassures him that they both have a lifetime ahead of them for new adventures. And then he leans forward, and it's supposed to be meaningful because she's been waiting for like her next kiss. But he kisses her hat. He kisses her forehead, but she's wearing a toque. So it's just like the folded up part. It looks so stupid to the visual aids.
It's so dumb.
He says there's plenty of time to be kissed, and she lets him have this one. And from here, they cross into the A plot. So there's a little more to come. We'll get there. Speaking of the A-plot, here it is. Now Dawson's expected to take feedback from an actual film professional? We pan from what is apparently the last shot of Dawson's movie to Joey in tears. Dawson asks what she thinks, and she sniffles that she can't find the words. Babbles that it's a rough cut and so on, begging her to be honest, and she is effusive. Clip 8.
In my entire life, I have never been so... unequivocally moved by words and moving images on screen. I mean, this is the type of motion picture going experience that not only enlightens and inspires, but it can change the way people look at their lives, their world, their universe.
My God, Joe, you have no idea how much that means, especially coming from you.
No, there's no question about it. I mean, Jack McPhee will be one of the great filmmakers of our generation. I mean, think about it, Dawson. We knew him when...
I directed this movie.
Spielberg, Scorsese, Fellini, Bergman, McPhee.
Yo, what are you talking about? You were there. I directed it. Look, Quick Days, a film by...
Now it says Jack McPhee.
Honey, there's only one word to describe you. Brilliant. No, genius.
Honey, you won't believe what happened. I ran in to Steven Spielberg in the cafeteria. He offered me a job. I'm going to Hollywood.
Thank you.
you marry me?
Yes.
But you're gay.
I guess not.
So satisfying.
It really
is. Something about the delivery of Spielberg in the cafeteria killed me for like 10 minutes.
It's so good. Also, if you run into Spielberg anywhere near any kind of food, tell him to reopen Dive. As she slips out the window, Joey cheerfully tells Dawson he's not her type and never was, and he screams, no, so loud that he wakes himself up. Because you're not going to believe this. That was just a nightmare. It wasn't real. And the next day, a stunning woman played by Mae Chinnamick is gliding through a classroom at school, lecturing about filmmakers taking risks, which she is proving by standing in a public school classroom in Massachusetts with bare arms after the first snow of the season. Jen looks bored as hell. Dawson is rapt. She asks how the movie makes them feel just as a mix as Nicole Kennedy credit comes up. And I'm not going to get into this again, but how did it make you feel? It's not criticism. Jen thinks Capra is too saccharine and his characters are unrealistic and corny. Dawson disagrees because he thinks Capra films like Meet John Doe are actually pretty dark and talks about Gary Cooper's character defending the plight of the common man. And they go on, clip 9.
Good, Dawson. What else does his character represent?
I think optimism. I mean, the hero is an innocent, which allows him to believe that the future has hope, so the antagonist would be cynicism.
I agree. Good films are complex and ambiguous. They're filled with darkness as well as light. I think this film is about how things could be.
Or should be.
I'm so
don't
tired.
Give him a last word.
No, don't. Don't. Damn you, the bell. In the hall, Dawson tells Jen he was sorry Mr. Gold left, but Miss Kennedy is every boy's wet dream, Jen guesses. Dawson claims what he feels for her is more like hero worship and exposits that she's there on sabbatical while writing a screenplay for TriStar. No one cares about the studio. Shut up. But Jen is happy Dawson finally has someone around to talk to whose opinion he might respect. But no, he has not shown her Creek Days yet out of fear that she will think it's amateurish. And suddenly, Mitch is standing between them in his substitute teacher drag. Dawson beckons him into a classroom to whine that it's awkward enough to have Mitch as his English teacher, but if people hear him call Mitch dad, he'll get peed up. This is absurd. People know which kids' parents are teachers at their school, and yeah, they don't care. Like, people in my grade, like, both of his parents were math teachers at my school. Like, it didn't matter.
Yeah, same with mine. Also, there's like two regional schools, hundreds of students. No, like if they know, no one cares.
Yeah.
Everyone's been on a bus for 45 minutes to get there from Dennisport. No one gives a shit.
Dawson is glad Mitch has a job he enjoys, but when they're in school, Mitch should pretend he doesn't know Dawson. I am sure he would love to. I would, but then Dawson yawns and admits he's been sleeping poorly due to nightmares. He spent the past couple of weeks trying to change things he can't control. All he knows for sure is that he wants to be a filmmaker, and that is all that matters. And then we're at the fair, where we find out Miss Kennedy's been briefed on how everyone has to talk around here, clip 10.
So when do I get to see this cinematic masterpiece of yours?
That was rude.
Yeah. Love that delivery. And word of advice, don't ask again.
No.
Yeah, take this W and move on.
Yep. Dawson's amazed that she knows about it, but of course Mitch has been bragging about him in the teacher's lounge. And Dawson, calling Mitch by his first name, barf, claims he exaggerates. Dawson isn't going to show her he should at least tell her what it's about, Miss Kennedy says. And they connect over writing in the same genre. He says her being here has given him a lot of hope. She grew up in a small town like this, and knowing that she made it is huge for him. She speeches that people sometimes mistake her ambition for arrogance, but when she started, she had to do it on her own, and it toughened her. Dawson smiles too excitedly at this, and she should have guessed his film is a love story, given his romantic spirit, which, like, you're new, you're not really a teacher. I guess I have to tell you, don't say shit like that to your students about their romantic spirit. Yuck.
No.
Later, Dawson and Miss Kennedy continue talking about movies in a tiresomely show-offy way. For example, clip 11.
I'm pretty obsessive about my writing. I think it shows in my work, which I'm sure it does yours.
Shut up. Just shut up.
No, that's not how it works to be a writer for a living.
No.
If you or obsessive about it, you should probably go talk to somebody about that. But discipline is a different word. Please get an actual accredited fucking dictionary, writer's room. I'm exhausted.
Dawson takes the opening she has given him to bring up his movie. She assumes he wants her to watch it and thought he'd never ask. And much later, we rejoin them. This is a long clip, but it's devastating to Dawson, so we gotta hear it all. Clip 12.
It's fine.
Fine. Well, come on. I mean, your opinion is really important to me. I really want to learn, so.
You want my honest opinion?
Yeah, don't hold back.
Are you sure you want the truth?
Yeah.
Okay, then I'm not going to sugarcoat it, Dawson. I think your film is completely uninspired. I mean, the production value's flat, your story's non-existent, even your dialogue isn't believable.
I mean, it needs some work. I mean, I know that.
It lacks emotion of any kind and says nothing to the audience.
I was thinking, if I cut the B storyline...
It won't help. It's a preposterous soap opera about a bunch of teenagers who talk too much.
Yeah!
I mean, we've seen it before, all that self-aware, self-referential hyperbole filled with cliches that are disguised as send-ups. It actually borders on plagiarism.
I mean, this is only my second film, though. I'm still learning.
Look, Hollywood's tough. They don't hand out rejection with a box of chocolates. It's real, it's harsh, and it hurts. You're sweet, Dawson, and you're just the kind of person that Hollywood eats for breakfast. And it would break my heart to see that happen to you.
Thank you. I appreciate your honesty.
Okay. He doesn't. He looks like he's going to cry,
no.
Is A.
Yeah, B, or barf.
You can't ask her to tell you what she really thinks after she said it's fine. You know what she thinks.
Yeah.
Stop there. But since you didn't, you can't then be like, I'm baby. Like, this is only my second movie. Like, well, you wanted her to tell you what she thought, and she did. So,
yeah.
Sorry.
And you pressed her to do that. She's like, no, it's fine. And you're like, really? And then the tone in the first that he's like, no, I mean, I want to hear what you think. The just condescending, like, I expect to be bathed in saliva.
Oh, yeah.
In that sequence, and then his face just like melting and the nostrils flaring,
mm-hmm.
as she's going all in on him. But like, the fact is that Dawson is not sweet. He's self-absorbed, arrogant, and a kind of a fail son, and he would be perfect in Hollywood. He would not need any help. He is white and thinks the world of himself, and the world is structured to reinforce that belief.
That's true.
Nothing heartbreaking about it, Nicole.
So when we see Dawson next, he's trudging through the fair, watching Miss Kennedy get into the passenger seat of Mitch's SUV. And in the other direction, he sees Joey selling a piece of art and then celebrating with Jack. This isn't going to help with the loneliness Dawson was whining about in the last episode. And then we're with Joey as she finds Colin to say that Jack's not coming and she had no right to accept a date on his behalf. She makes sure Colin's okay and he laughs that he's on the proverbial rebound because he got the same memo as Miss Kennedy. He started dating a friend, so when they broke up, he lost two relationships. Joey asks why he and his ex broke up. At the time, he could think of a million reasons, but now he can't think of any. Joey gets it, of course. Sometimes he regrets being in such a hurry to move forward, but there comes a point where it's impossible to go back. And then he pecks Joey on the cheek, and that's a wrap on that guy. Goodbye to that weird hair. So then Dawson approaches Madame Zenovich while she is quite obviously taking down her banner. And instead of offering to help, since he is taller than she is, he just confirms that she charges $5. She says she's closed, and Dawson digs deeper into self-pity. Clip 13.
Sorry, but you know what? I don't even need to know my future. I pretty much know what my future holds. Dawson Leary is destined to live in misery and die loveless, friendless, and in complete obscurity.
Don't mock the spirits. They are powerful and unforgiving. Oh, the lovers. It's very interesting. A soulmate walks in your path. One who you have known for many lifetimes before this one. She knows you well. She sees into your soul. She feels your pain.
She blew me off.
No. She is here. She surrounds you.
Why do I keep losing her?
That which is lost can be found again.
Yeah. Also, Piccolo, settle down. Shut up.
I think it might be a tin whistle, but point taken. Either way.
Yeah, I am not a wind instrument expert. Took a guess, Piccolo.
So then Dawson digs a 5 out of his pocket, but she's vanished. Or so we're supposed to think. Meanwhile, I think people come in and out of Dawson's frame of reference all the time. He just is looking at himself and doesn't notice when they leave.
Mm-hmm. Has been blathering so long, he doesn't notice when they just walk off into traffic.
Back in his room, Dawson mopes over to Jack's model of the town and very rudely smashes a whole street's worth of buildings onto the floor. Bitch, you better hope you didn't break anything. You didn't pay Jack for that. He might want it back. Like, that's not okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Joey walks up to the house and looks at Dawson's window. Inside, Dawson's staring at her photo, then picks up the phone. She hesitates outside. Dawson hangs up. She sees the light turn off and shuffles away. Dawson hugs his fucking knees on the window seat. Joey rows home, and when she returns to her house, a man is standing on the porch. She calls out, and he turns around. Clip 14.
Daddy.
Oh, shit! Her dad's back.
Huh.
Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP.
Miss Kennedy.
Yes. Of course. I mean, I'd love to think she destroys him permanently. I just know that she doesn't.
No, she doesn't.
I'm going to say Mr. Potter, because he actually, unlike his daughter, could pull off a pretty good surprise. Least valuable player. Colin's hairstylist, because I'm not over it. Yeah. It's so bad. So bad.
The Barnstable County Parole Board. Do you want to call his family members and let them know that you sprung him? Although I think this becomes a plot point later, but anyway.
Right. And that's it.
Next time on Again With This, the reunited Potters jump in the deep end with a catering job featuring senior Larry Tension, an almost runaway bride, a soulmate reunion on the dance floor, and Abby getting an in-person tryout for that Satan's Handmaiden gig. Speaking of lakes of fire, someone should have thrown Dawson's hair into one, and you can see for yourself in our visual aids, which you'll find for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. You'll also find our complete archive of recap episodes there. Again With This podcast.com/subscribe, and that is where you can join the Again With This club for extra episodes and access to our Discord. All of that is at againwiththispodcast.com/club. I'm Dress Up Montage Sarah D. Bunting, and I am on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Great Pickup Line Tara Ariano. She's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, appreciates your honesty. Talk to you next time.
I love you, Sarah. I love you, and I don't care who knows.